Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This episode of Happy Hour is sponsored by Gold Star. Gold Star has a great selection of affordable tickets to all sorts of live events, including theater, with Broadway and Broadway national tours, concerts, comedy, dance, and more.
The first 200 listeners who use the promo code HAPPYHOUR, one word, all caps, will get $10 off their purchase at goldstar.com/happyhour or using the Gold Star app.
Well, I don't know what's going to be worse because I just got crickets for the leopard gecko and you have hay fever.
I know. Oh, here's a question. Do you guys call it hay fever or do you just call it allergies?
We'll call it both.
Okay.
I think hay fever, I will notice an older gen, like my parents' generation, calling it hay fever because, or also, I think maybe I notice them calling it allergies more too, because nowadays allergies can mean a whole slew of things.
Well, exactly.
But like my father has hay fever in comes from a world when like people weren't allergic to peanuts, you know?
Right. Okay. Yeah. Cause I feel like that's, I've heard people say, oh, it's just my allergies.
Right.
And they mean I can't breathe cause there's grass.
Right. Yeah. You know, hay fever. Yeah.
Exactly.
Do you have hay in Scotland? I assume you have an abundance of it.
We eat it. That's what I had for dinner.
Oh,
a lovely bale of hay.
Delicious. Did you just like keep
with whiskey? A whiskey sauce.
That blindsided me. That was fun.
Will somebody get us another drink?
Welcome to Jim and Tomic's Musical Theater Happy Hour, your weekly podcast with triplets and tequila.
Do you have that song, Tequila?
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Yes, it was one of the best high school talent shows I've ever seen, where it was the jazz band came out, like, the jazz band showed up, no one knew what song they were going to play, and then one of the shyest kids I've ever known, not a singer, not a performer, like a tech geek kid, stands in front of the microphone and everyone's like, what the heck are they gonna sing? Like, what the heck is, and then the band goes into Tequila and the kid stands there the whole time until he gets to Tequila, and it brought the house down. It was so funny and it made all the adults overlook the alcohol connotation, because like,
absolutely,
let's be honest, compared to some of the songs kids listen to today, the song Tequila, pretty tame.
Yeah, catchy lyrics.
Catchy lyrics. Easy to memorize.
Absolutely. I wonder where he is now.
He's probably a world famous performer.
I'd like that idea. You should find out, please. We'll follow that up later, guys. Don't worry. So, hey, what are you drinking today? Are you drinking tequila?
Today, I am drinking a spiked café con leche.
A spiked café con leche?
Yeah.
Is that because you're an alcoholic?
It's because I'm an alcoholic.
The amount that we drink, I mean,
Every time we podcast.
Absolutely. It's dangerous. Well, I'm just having... Would you count this? Would you count, like, strawberry piragua?
Sure. Not maybe as alcoholic, but, you know, I'm proud of
you. Does it need to be alcoholic? They don't need to be alcoholic, do they? Is that a rule that we've... Have we ever had that rule?
Oh, I've had that rule. Have you not? Well, maybe that's why I laugh so much during the podcast.
I think sometimes I've had, like, water from the sea, etc. I don't know. Anyway,
I just
to make sure
was...
it's a drink, it's been out for, like, an hour, so it's just liquid
now.
Right,
so it's just pure just liquid syrup. Sticky. It's probably really gross. It's probably, like, pure sugar water. Lukewarm pink sugar water.
Oh, yeah. Don't know why I'm drinking it. How idiotic.
I know. What a silly thing. Well, perhaps to explain, you have a quiz statement for us. I'm just going to start calling them that.
The new Quaitman. Yep. Okay, well, this musical, Thomas, was partially inspired by a New York Pilates studio on 185... I can't even speak this hay fever. On 181st Street.
What show could that be? It's Pilates the Musical.
I wish. Wouldn't that be great? Stretch. And Stretch. I don't know. It's In the Heights.
Lights up on Washington Heights. Up at the break of day, I wake up and I got this little punk I gotta chase away. Pop the grade at the crack of dawn. Sing while I wipe down the awning. Hey, y'all, good morning.
Ice cold piragua. Parcha, china, cherry, strawberry, and just for today, I got mame.
Oye, piragüero, ¿cómo estás?
Como siempre, señor Usnavi.
I am Usnavi, and you probably never heard my name. Reports of my fame are greatly exaggerated, exacerbated by the fact that my syntax is highly complicated, because I immigrated from the single greatest little place in the Caribbean, Dominican Republic. I love it. Jesus, I'm jealous of it, and beyond that, ever since my folks passed on, I haven't gone back. God damn, I gotta get on there. Oh. The milk is gone bad. Hold it just a second. Why is everything in this fridge warm and tepid? I better step it up and fight the heat. Cause I'm not making any profit if the coffee isn't light and sweet. Woo! Abuela, my fridge broke. I got café, but no con leche.
Try my mother's own recipe. One can of condensed milk.
Nice.
Ay, paciencia y fe.
That was abuela. She's not really my abuela, but she practically raised me. This corner is her escuela now. You probably thinking, I'm up Schitt's Creek. I never been north of 96th Street. Well, you must take the A train. Even farther than Harlem to northern Manhattan and maintain. Get off at 181st and take the escalator. I hope you're writing this down. I'm going to test your later.
And do you know what? It's specifically appropriate. We're going through a heat wave over here at the moment.
We're going through a heat wave here. It is 101 degrees in Denver today. Hold on. I'll convert that for you.
Thank you. Don't have a clue. That's something like 32.
That's 38.
Oh, that's really hot.
It's really
hot.
Really
hot.
It's really, really hot.
Have you got
the AC on? Oh, I do. Central air. It's beautiful. Thank goodness. Hopefully we don't have a power outage. Oh, I don't have to hint at it anymore. We already said it was a nice.
Yep, exactly. Are your fingernails slipping off in the heat?
Ew.
That's a lane. That's a lane.
Is that all? Every time I listen to the show, I hear something new, and I was trying to write them down, and I didn't write any of them down.
It's not a lyric. It's a one of the wonderful script.
From the
script
book?
Lines. Yes. So, In the Heights, here we are. Well, music and lyrics by, of course, our Lord and Savior, Mr. Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Thank you, Mr. Miranda. Book by... Oh, you should say this one. I'll say it wrong.
I was just waiting to see if you tried.
Nope.
And the book by Chiara Alegria Hudes.
Yes, it opened on Broadway in 2008 and then moved into the West End in 2015.
Yes, indeed it did. It was on Broadway for quite a while as well, we should say. It was
played for several years. Yeah, super popular.
Yeah. And then, of course, the defining moment in the Heights history.
It's number one. Like, forget Broadway, forget West End. We got to talk about the Scottish amateur premiere production.
Exactly. Lin-Manuel himself said our video was great. So, really...
Jimmy directed the show, everyone.
I did. I've said this about 5 million times, I think, on the podcast. But yes, I directed the Scottish amateur premiere.
Woo!
That means nothing. Hooray.
It won 4 Tony Awards, including Best Musical, not Jimmy's production, the original Broadway production.
Sadly, we were pipped.
I'm sure Jimmy's show was great. And hugely popular. Maybe not Lin-Manuel Miranda's most popular musical.
Yeah, I know he pipped himself, but
but
hey.
certainly super, you know, paved the way for Hamilton.
Absolutely. And in many ways, I would say it's an unforgettable show.
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? You'll always remember Heights.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what on earth is it?
In the Heights.
Do you want me to field this one, or do you want to?
Oh, I got this. In the Heights takes place in Washington Heights in New York City around 181st Street across 3 days, July 3rd through July 5th. Around and about these three bodegas. right? Basically, we follow Usnavi, our narrator character who runs a corner shop on this corner, and he introduces us to the various characters around Washington Heights, and we learn about their struggles with, you know, their own Latino heritage and the gentrification of the neighborhood, and, you know, I think being a struggling financial community in New York and all the things that come with that. There's love and romance and education, problems, and a power outage, and I think one of the saddest deaths in all of musical theater. And, you know, 3 days later, the musical's done. It's a big, massive multiplayer. It is a true piece of musical theater. I think this is, structure-wise, one of the more perfect pieces of musical theater.
Absolutely, and completely original.
Yeah, 100%. You don't see that very often.
You absolutely don't, especially not one that has a story.
Yeah.
Like this.
Yeah, like a fully fledged, detailed story with, you know, multifaceted characters whose stories intertwine. It's also not just like a bunch of separate stories, like an A plot, B plot separate. Like, it's a true integrated plot musical. Yeah, a beautiful, beautifully stunning show.
Yeah, and backed obviously by an incredible score. Obviously, this was one of the first times on Broadway that we really got to see hip-hop coming in. Obviously, we're old hats now with hip-hop.
Yes.
Aren't we?
I know
But this was really, absolutely, this was really one of the first times that it was certainly popularized on a Broadway stage. So,
And of course, it was very much owed to Lin-Manuel Miranda's genius and taste and intelligence, you know, blending of, because it is while it is certainly hip-hop infused, it is also very purely a piece of musical theater. And it flips back and forth between styles and genres.
Absolutely,
every other word, it's crazy.
It's a melting pot, just as Washington Heights itself is. It is in fact itself a melting pot. I've got all these quotes up my sleeve from a few years ago, don't you worry.
It's like you've studied this show intensely or something.
It's almost like that. 1, 2, 3, what would you do with 960? I mean, if it's just between you and me, esa pregunta es tricky. I know. 960s, I start my life with a brand new lease. Atlantic City with a Malibu breeze and a brand new weave. Or maybe just bleach. Y'all are freaks.
Yo, I'm just saying.
Did you speak any Spanish before this show?
Sí, un poquito solamente.
Okay.
Pero,
that's as far as we made
it. I can't remember the word for enough. What's the word for enough? Doesn't matter. A bit. In particular, Latin American, because of my love for Shakira. And that isn't even a joke.
You said it with such a straight face. I know it's not a joke, and it's fantastic.
Exactly. I'm deadly shit. Like, and it's quite funny because I kept getting, because I studied it in school for 4 years.
Okay.
And
that, wait, hold on. I find that surprising. I don't know why I find that surprising. These are these weird minor cultural differences that I never would have thought that.
Well, I study Spanish.
That you study Spanish in school. That they teach Spanish in school in Scotland.
What modern languages did you do?
I took Spanish for 3 years.
Yeah,
but also like half of the population in the United States speaks Spanish.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's in Europe.
I guess that makes sense. I forget you all are much closer to each other.
Exactly. Normally the choices we get are Spanish, French, and German.
Mm. Yeah, that's pretty close. We'll do. There's Spanish. A lot of like Spanish, French, and Mandarin.
yeah, we're not quite there yet.
Yeah,
but soon, I imagine.
Fascinating.
Anyway, but I used to get in trouble all the time in class because my pronunciations were Latin American as opposed to Spanish, and
were Shakira's pronunciations
Exactly, exactly. And I was like, but it's correct. And we had a big old fight, as I did with many times, because I was an awful child. But yes, a little bit. And I think that's quite important.
Yeah.
Because I think right off the bat, I won't try and talk about me directing it the whole time, because that would get boring. It's not what it's about. But, excuse me. I think it's really, really important that if you want to undertake this show, that you really need to do your homework.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Like, and I think if I hadn't done any Spanish whatsoever, I think, first of all, I don't think I would have engaged with the musical as much.
Right.
Initially.
Yeah.
But also, it would just be too much of a step, like a culture step, because...
Yeah, well, it's integral to the show. I mean, if you're still out there and you haven't listened to the show yet, or a clip hasn't come up in the podcast yet, about I would say what, maybe 15% of this show is in Spanish.
Yeah, I would go more. I would 100% go more, and because there's, you know, some characters who, for example, with the Piragua guy, yeah. He most of his lines include some sort of Spanish in them. In Carnaval, he.
Yeah,
speaks solely and sings solely in Spanish,
yeah,
and unabashedly so. And there'll just be those like odd lines just thrown in,
mm-hmm.
that are just completely in Spanish, and it's not, they don't, you know, at no point does Kiara ever sort of stop and say, this is what it means,
right? Yeah,
do you know what I mean? You just,
I think that is one of the fantastic things about it, like, you know, this is abuela, she's not really my abuela, and they call her abuela the whole dang time.
Yeah,
and you're gonna figure out that it means grandma, but
yep.
We don't, like, you know, Dora the Explorer doesn't come out and isn't like, do you know what abuela means?
Right? Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Which I, you know, it just feels so intelligent off the back. It is unapologetic for how, like, you got to keep up with this show,
for sure. And I think it's one of those things, you know, again. Said it before, we'll say it again, I'm a little white boy.
Yeah, me too.
And this isn't in my heritage at all, so in order for me to actually go about directing some of this with authenticity, any shred of that,
mm-hmm.
You really need to do your homework. You don't, yeah. want to go into this and talk from a, you know, you don't want to guesswork,
right.
your way through In the Heights.
Yeah,
it's too, the cultural aspect of it is too important.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, more important than maybe the cultural aspect in some other shows. I'm thinking in my mind Brigadoon, but I don't want to say anything insulting.
But yeah, no, exactly. That, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, definitely. It's just this is almost the story that it wants to tell. It's the story of this community of people,
right? Yeah,
Brigadoon, I don't think, wanted to tell that story, but it did in a way.
Yeah, accidentally.
But no, so it's interesting that we sort of said that as a musical, it's so complete and very,
mm-hmm.
strong as a story. Because, yeah. honestly, I don't think I've read a script as difficult to work with as In the Heights. I really, really don't. And not in a, like, Waiting for Godot way. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, yes.
It's not a Sarah Kane play. It right. is...
It's pretty straightforward in its content.
The high school, and I feel so bad saying this. I yeah. really do. I really feel bad because obviously, who am I,
mm-hmm.
to right. say this? But it doesn't help a director when, you know, timelines are ignored.
Okay.
For example,
I just find this. I've worked on the show twice at two different schools now.
Yep.
And I've never thought much about the book, so this is a new thought to me. What do you struggle with about the book?
So mostly, I mean, as a director, I'm a big character focused,
yeah.
son of a gun. And so I timeline all my characters,
okay.
And then work with the actors accordingly. But for someone like Sonny,
mm-hmm.
who the hell is he?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And actually, like, you don't quite know his relation to anyone.
Yeah.
Usnavi, abuela,
yeah.
He's just kind of there,
I guess. That's
he doesn't
true
have an age,
right?
So you don't know where he's come from,
right?
And you kind of know he's a millennial, but
yeah.
that's about it. And, like, you know, if you're developing, yeah. a character and you can't say, I was born
right.
X.
I mean, it's
difficult.
They call him, he's Usnavi's cousin, which might be about all we get.
That's it. And you never, you know, it doesn't talk about, oh, my uncle, as in Usnavi's father.
Right.
You know, his parents are very important to him.
Yeah.
You don't know, does that mean that he's from the Dominican Republic as well?
Right. Did Usnavi's parents and his, you know, either, like, whether it's his father's brother or whatever, also come over at the same time?
Exactly.
Or was Sonny kind of sent over later and, like, go find your cousin Usnavi? Yeah, I guess that's
this is
true.
It. We don't know. We absolutely don't know. And it's one of those things, I think, for a show that is about where you come from,
mm-hmm.
you should really have where each of your characters come from.
Yeah.
Kind of labeled.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is more of a show about your found and chosen family than that. Certainly based on where you come from, but...
But that's the thing, is you need to know what you're ignoring before you work out
I guess that's
what
true.
You're accepting.
Yeah, from I see from a director standpoint the frustration.
It was... Yeah, I think that's it. That's what I'm coming at. As an audience member, you don't really care.
You don't need to know anything about Sonny for him to be a successful character.
Yeah, I think it's a shame because I think there are a lot of characters in this show that are extremely well written.
Yeah.
That have their whole kind of path paved out for them.
Yeah.
And it's a shame to just let some characters fall by the wayside. I don't like waste.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
No, that's true.
And I feel like those characters then just become foils. They just become waste.
Right.
Which is a shame.
Yeah. And it's easier for them to fall into a stereotype or, you know, kind of
exactly.
one dimensionality. Exactly. Yeah. And
because actually, if you look at someone like Carla,
mm-hmm.
who is very one dimensional.
Yeah.
And who is very stereotypical. And you don't really at no point want to think, oh, well, where was Carla from?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But even then, she gives you a full history of her.
Right.
You know, my mom was Dominican Cuban.
Right, exactly. You get all that. Yeah.
Yeah. So even with her, you still get it. Sonny.
Underdeveloped.
The jury's out. The jury's out on that one. It wouldn't take much. That's the thing. There's so many opportunities.
I know. Yeah. That's, yeah. And it is such a lean and mean musical. Like, you can drop a line here or there and it's fine. Because there are so many people, it does fall into the, like, you know, what, we learn, like, don't we mention Abuela not taking her medicine once? And then, like, uh-oh, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's,
oops.
Right? It's one of those, like, the moment the character shows up and starts coughing, you're like, ah, you're going to die.
Yep.
And so it wouldn't take much in how lean some of the other exposition is in this musical to just give Sonny a little more background.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. The other one as well I want to talk about is mm-hmm. the Rosarios.
Okay.
Because I think they're severely underwritten.
Okay.
So, in fact, particularly with Camilla.
Mm-hmm.
So when I approach them as a family,
yeah.
Obviously you understand that to Camilla and to
Kevin.
Kevin, their heritage and their culture
mm-hmm.
is extremely important.
Yeah.
And they've raised Nina
mm-hmm.
Accordingly.
Yeah.
And then obviously that's what Nina eventually struggles with, is kind of going out into the big world and realizing, well, how do I keep this? How do I,
mm-hmm.
you know, stay true to this? And they just want what's best for me, but how do yeah. I fill this in? Blah, blah, blah.
Right.
but it's... sort of their relationship and yeah, like particularly with Camilla's character
mm-hmm.
I think she's immensely underwritten,
yeah,
because Enough kind of is there, the song Enough is there
mm-hmm.
Obviously as let's give Camilla a moment.
Yeah, I always want more from Enough.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a shame that that's all she has,
yeah.
because she has to do so much in that moment.
Yeah.
And like, so kind of Camilla's kind of beats. At the start, you find out that she kind of runs a lot of the reins at the
taxi
firm.
Company. Mm.
Yep. And then when we find out that the money's kind of gone at the dinner party scene, and she, you know, storms off,
mm-hmm.
and then comes back and is the kind of, you know, proper like mother figure to Nina and kind of puts Kevin down.
Yeah.
I just feel like the song itself, and I've seen it played this, how they played it in London, it's just kind of played a bit ridiculously, it's her like fear song.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
As opposed to the fact that it's a mother,
yeah,
and a wife,
yeah,
kind of keeping control of her family when that might not necessarily be the thing she wants to do.
Right. And maybe not the most, you know, if we're talking about how ingrained their culture is, like,
totally,
we're breaking out of that culture bubble in that moment too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because I don't think there is any moment when you think, Nina's going to divorce, Camila's going to divorce Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't that moment. And I think there's a lot tied into why that wouldn't ever come into play.
Right.
But it's not really there in the text.
Yeah.
At all. You really need to dig and you really need to, as a director, tell that story.
Find the ways to big her up that way.
Totally. It's just not really there. And I think, again, that's a shame.
Yeah, for sure.
Because, honestly, for me, I go to Watching the Heights to see the Rosario story. I think it's a beautiful story in our beautiful family.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, I think I don't know if we're not in A-plot, B-plot land, but it's almost, I would call their story almost more primary than some of Usnavi's difficulties. Usnavi is the narrator in Into the Woods.
Yeah, their story has the biggest ups and downs,
yeah,
and the biggest change happening.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because the all three of them change each other.
Yeah. Well, and the most choices. The story happens to just about everyone else for the most part. Yeah. Usnavi makes some choices at the end, maybe.
Yep.
But like, you know, Abuela wins the lotto accidentally. Like the rest of that is from the outside. But
definitely,
the Rosarios are making decisions about their life and their future, and you know, and it's like, do we sell or do we not sell? Do we go back to college? Do we not go back to college? Do we date Benny or not date Benny? Like, they are some pretty hefty personal decisions that are like, you know, are tough. Aren't like, well, clearly you have to choose this one. Like, you could pause the musical at any time and convince me that any of those decisions would go either way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, you can't call it. You don't know at the end whether they are going to be together,
yeah,
or whether Nina is going to stay or go.
Right.
All of these decisions are made. And I think, to be honest, I think all the right decisions are made.
Yeah.
By the end, I think it's good that she goes.
Yeah.
Because you get that light and shade when you compare her, mm-hmm, with Usnavi. But I would just want to see, I don't know, I just want to see more depth there.
Yeah.
But then I guess it's like, you've only got 2 hours.
You've only got 2 hours and there's a lot of characters. And, I mean, Jimmy, let's be honest, we gotta know all about the Piragua guy. Like, he has all that exposition about his personal backstory that...
Exactly.
You know.
It's really important.
Right? Like, learning his name.
Yeah. Piragua guy. He was born Piragua Estevez guy.
I love Piragua guy. And then Graffiti Pete. You know,
that's his name.
He's like, it's the wrong comparison
Graffiti
to make.
Sullivan Pete.
It's like a character straight out of West Side Story. Like,
yeah,
you know, why do they call you Smidge? No one knows. Is that a character in West Side Story? Probably not. But I convinced you that it was for a second.
No, you didn't. But yes, Smidge, my favorite. Yeah, exactly. That thing. So there's a lot of superfluity.
Yes.
Superfluity?
Yeah.
I don't know how you pronounce that one properly.
That's actually the plural word for a group of nuns. This is not a joke. It's
a superfluity of nuns.
Yeah. That's a collective noun for nuns. It was in a Sister Act video. We looked it up.
Stunning.
I know. Fascinating, right?
These are facts, everyone. This is what you came here for. I love that.
But yes,
oh, that's brilliant.
There is not an abundance of nuns, but certainly a superfluity. The superfluity?
Yeah, it's hard, difficult.
Yeah, it is hard, yeah. Lots of superfluousness in this
exactly.
show.
Exactly. In that moment, we lost all of our integrity. But yeah, and so it's, but it all just kind of works. It creates the celebratory vibe. Yeah. And
well, and you can, I mean, I don't remember where I read this, but it was Lin-Manuel Miranda wrote something like 50 or 100 songs for this show. Like the writing process for this show was extensive and multifaceted, and you can tell that there were different endings and different outcomes and different, you know, relationships. I mean, we haven't even gotten to Sonny and Graffiti Pete here yet.
Just do wait.
But, you know, and it shows the intricacy and what stayed and what didn't stay. And so I wonder, somewhere on the cutting room floor, is there more about Sonny's background? Is, you know, there more Rosario depth? That sort of stuff.
And I would hope so, because the thing is so when I was directing it, that was the story that I chose to pull out. And you can't just create that from nowhere.
Right.
The seeds have to be there. So
hopefully,
in the Heights extended edition that we get when they make the movie, I don't know. You know what I mean? It'll be 12 hours long.
Exactly.
A story for everyone. Yeah, so mentioning Sonny and Graffiti Pete.
We learned this while we were trying to find a quiz question for this episode.
Exactly. So Sonny Usnavi's cousin, Graffiti Pete, local graffiti artist, buds throughout the show.
And in a previous draft, more than buds.
Exactly. So apparently when Sonny comes up with a plan to paint the grating in order to keep Usnavi here, they shared a little schneck.
Yeah. And confirmed by Lin-Manuel Miranda himself. Like, this is not some kind of, I mean, it started as some fan fiction, but then Lin jumped in and said, no, that's real.
Canonized it.
And isn't in the script anymore. Sonny is decidedly straight in the show. She was my babysitter first. So at least bye. He talks about women at some point, I say, now feeling a little unsure about this.
No, he does say she was my babysitter first.
The girl that I'm in love with,
maybe bye. Maybe bye.
But so here,
maybe this is struggling.
Right, somewhere on the
spectrum. No, but honestly.
Yeah.
So this is how I took it.
Yeah.
I played Sonny gay. Not me personally, but that was the story that we chose
that you
to
told.
Tell.
Yeah.
That Sonny ultimately was gay.
Do you feel vindicated by this newfound knowledge?
I truly do. I truly, truly do. Because it really does make sense. It doesn't seem out of place.
Yeah.
His lines are sassy as feck.
Yeah.
Tell me all of the straight men that pull out a Cheetah Rivera reference. Tell me them.
Like,
do you know what I mean?
Drunk Cheetah Rivera. It's one I try to pull out from time to time. But so this is a question I always have whenever a cut song from a show comes up or there are revelations about a previous draft. Why, at some point, the artistic team made the decision that this was the wrong story choice. We can't have this Sonny Graffiti Pete Mackinette moment. And I wonder, you know, why? Like, what made them pull that? Like, I can justify things in my mind, and I'm sure they're similar. Like, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on. We're dealing with a whole bunch of issues, and adding one more, it would seem kind of a throwaway gay issue at that moment, which isn't quite associated with the core story that they're trying to tell.
But so here's the thing.
Yeah.
Why does it need to be an issue?
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Why can't they just share this relationship that you don't get to see the whole of?
Right.
And I guess, because it's gay, people would be I need to know more. You didn't tell me they were gay.
Right.
They can't be gay. What's going on there?
I do think, we forget how quickly the times have changed. This is 2008. I think this is a different kind of gay time than in 2018. I bet you if this premiered in 2018, it'd be they're gay, whatever.
Yeah, why not?
And it could be a tiny little, thing that is mildly funny without being offensive or seeming thrown in. Where I think in 2008, it would seem offensive on both sides.
Yeah.
like offensive to people who are like, what, gay people in my musical? Like, let me tell you something, honey. But also offensive to the gay community in a way that's like, what, you wrote this gay character, but they don't get songs or like lots
of extended
dialogue about their relationship.
All they get is one Chita Rivera reference and then they're gone. Yeah. But that's the thing, though. I think for someone like Sunny and Graffiti Pete, they'd be great gay characters because they're completely non-stereotypical.
Yeah.
You know, Sunny talks about wanting to change his town and kind of ride the gentrification wave.
Yeah.
And kind of fight for the kids. He's this little revolutionary guy. And Graffiti Pete is a bit of a thug. Like, we don't get gay characters like that.
I mean, with a name like Graffiti Pete, I think you're more than a bit of a thug.
Absolutely. And here's something that pissed me off, right? I'm calling out... this is just me venting all of my grief that I had for it.
Jimmy the Ranter.
I know. I'm calling out some reviewers of ours.
Uh-huh.
Because I think in like three reviews, maybe two or three reviews anyway, they were like, the Graffiti Pete and the Sunny weren't really believable as street gangsters, but, you know, they were fine. And I was like... I'm sorry. At what point did I ever say, like, these guys, these are the G, you know, like, what? At no point. Like, he's sassy and dances, and then Graffiti Pete is an artist. Like, at what point do these guys need to be, like, of the street, so super streetwise? And it just really annoyed me, because it was like, that. At no point did I ever try... You're looking at me funny, and I don't know.
Listeners, you can't see this at home, but Jimmy is now standing on his desk. He has thrown his headphones off. He's banging his fists.
Yep. But it just... just like, why do they have to be?
Well, I mean, it is a shame, because this is a show about busting stereotypes.
Exactly.
And, you know, if we could write responses to critics, that would be my opening line to them.
I'm just so frustrated because, and not like the thing is it took it totally with a pinch of salt, as you can tell. but just because it's like, we've already talked about critics being part of the problem, but
right,
this is why, you know what I mean? You haven't paid attention.
Yeah. Yeah. You haven't paid attention.
You've just been like, he is doing graffiti, therefore he must be in a gang,
right?
And, you know, eligible for knife crime.
Right.
Yeah. Like, actually, no, some people who do graffiti, just artists.
Yeah, you just know artists. What I mean? That's the thing that happens. And, like, you know, then there's all these... It means these are these critics walking into these musicals expecting one-dimensionality and simple characters, which is a shame for the art form.
Absolutely. Anyway, I'm off my soapbox now.
He sat down. He's put his headphones back on.
Yes.
Don't worry.
My shirt is back on.
I'm sure you'll get angry in a second, because I want to tell you about the times I've worked on this show in high schools.
Great.
No me preocupo por él. They're not worried about me. Aquí está nuestra estrella.
They are all counting on me to succeed.
I am the one who made it out. The one who always made the grade. But maybe I should have just stayed home. When I was a child, I stayed wide awake. Climbed to the highest place on every fire escape. Restless to climb. I got every scholarship, saved every dollar. The first to go to college.
So, good. I try not to talk too specifically about some of my personal life work, but I'm far enough away from these schools that I think I can talk about it with a little anonymity. In the Heights, the Rights came out, Rodgers and Hammerstein, when I was early in my education career, and a bunch of high schools picked it up right away because it's a huge show with a bunch of female roles. Of course, high schools are going to do it. And I helped with tech for two very different high school communities who did this show. One high school community was a very, very diverse high school community. The kids at that school collectively spoke something like 52 different languages.
Wow.
Like, diverse in every way. And the drama director there, I know, had sometimes, like, it was an interesting struggle and challenge to kind of bring musical theater to these kids. There is, it's something I've wanted to like tease out the intricacies for a long time. But up until very recently, musical theater in high school is a suburban white kid thing.
Totally.
Whether it's culturally or funding or probably some combination of both. But so to have this really diverse school, doing musical theater was just an interesting thing to watch. The year before, they did Thoroughly Modern Millie.
Wow.
And yeah, right. You know, yes, on so many different levels, and kind of spurred some fantastic conversations.
All right.
They had, you know, authentic, I don't know what kind of Asian people they were, but authentic Asian kids playing the very racist Asian characters.
Right.
And a very white girl playing Mrs. Mears. Like going full into the super racist connotation that it has. And it really spurred some conversation about like the past of these things. And like, but also had, is it Jimmy? Yeah.
A
Latino Jimmy. And,
okay, cool.
You know, like all across the board. You know, like I forget the, there's like a, oh, they're my kids mix up at the end of Millie, right? Like,
what with Bunfu and
no, because it's who's the
is it Dorothy?
Is it Dorothy and Jimmy are the kids of like what's her face? Whatever it is,
yes,
right,
it's 100%.
But like they were all of you know different backgrounds and different races, and like they just went fully into that. Like whatever, it's high school theater. Like and you know how theater should be. Like probably the truest, purest version of colorblind casting that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
In comes In the Heights. Certainly the school has a big Latino population, but also has kids all over the place. So very well cast, but then Kevin Rosario was like the whitest, blondest boy you've ever seen. Because he was the kid who was right for the part.
Yeah.
And the director wrote a beautiful note in the program about like this is a show about acceptance and a show about you know embracing our differences and you know in high school this is the last chance you have to play things that are different than you and you know thank you for coming to see the show. It was like a great way to say like hey we know this isn't how it's supposed to be and it was one of the most beautiful high school experience shows I've ever seen.
Great.
Flash two. A much different school, very predominantly white, more traditionally what you'd expect a kind of musical theater going crowd, musical theater high school program to be for whatever reason, did In the Heights maybe 2 years later. And one just kind of took no attention to any of the cultural differences in it, like didn't even spend time to work on the Spanish. It was all like awful American accents, which was super depressing. You know, and I worked tech on it and I was lower on the ladder too. So I'm not in a place where I could say a lot of things about it.
Yeah.
And it's like both sides of like being super elated about this show and super depressed about this show. Cause there's a wrong way to do it. And also hilariously, the kid, the white ginger kid who played Benny, which adds all sorts of confusion to the mix, would also comically go on to play Benny from Rent the next year, which really, you know, just adds all sorts of insult to injury.
Yeah.
But so I don't know. I have many mixed feelings about this sort of thing being performed in high school.
For sure.
Miranda himself has talked a lot about it, especially when people ask him about, like, what's going to happen when Hamilton becomes available?
Yeah.
Which, like, hint, hint, nudge, nudge, Hamilton's not going to be available for a long time.
No.
But it does beg the question, can all of these white suburban schools that want to do this show do this show?
Yep. It's really, I mean, it gets back to the same conversation we're going to have every other podcast, you
right.
know. There'll be some people say yes, there'll be some people say no. I know we've got a fair few Latin American listeners who do feel very passionately about this, and I'm very excited to hear what they have to say. But I think, I don't know, I just feel it's just the same. It's just the same.
Yeah,
any other show that involves race.
Yeah,
and it's just that thing of like, yup, it's a shame that you can't do it, but just pick your battles. Like you say, the first school, making it as diverse as possible.
Mm-hmm.
That's, in my opinion, the best way to go about it. That's what we did.
Yeah,
because obviously in Scotland,
right?
You know, we have a very, very small Latin American community, even at a university mm-hmm. that is quite multicultural. But we just tried to expand it as much as possible
yeah.
and show the kind of melting pot that is New York.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? But in hindsight,
yeah,
would I do it again? Absolutely not.
Interesting. And I do...
Because I just feel it's... I would say it wasn't as authentic as it should have been.
Yeah.
And it could never be
right.
as authentic.
Yeah. I think it is interesting. I think the like the teeter totter of it all, the balance, is like yeah. on one side you have authentically portraying these characters as written, right?
Yeah.
On the other side you have bringing this story and in many ways this culture to
yeah.
a community that otherwise might not experience it.
Absolutely.
And
that
yeah, it's a exactly. it's a hard balance to find.
Exactly. Well, that's exactly one of the reasons why I wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Was because you know, and this again, it sounds so trivial, but like growing up loving Shakira, like I was obsessed mm-hmm. with Shakira, and it opened up the world of Latin American culture to
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
And I got really into Latin dance.
Yeah.
And understanding that sort of things, that's the reason why I studied Spanish at school.
Right.
It was just to kind of get on board more with that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm by no means an expert, but
right.
it was something that I feel... And again, it's weird that we've had the Brigadoon conversation now, because obviously as Scottish people,
mm-hmm.
we're very proud of our heritage.
Mm-hmm.
And the Latin American community... is also extremely proud
also
of their heritage,
proud.
And their
yeah.
heritage is just as rich and just as diverse,
mm-hmm.
Much more so diverse. And that was kind of something that I wanted to bring to an Edinburgh audience that will probably never have heard of In the Heights
yeah.
before,
yeah.
let alone understanding really anything about the Latin American community and the gentrification of upstate New York.
Right.
Like, it's... Uptown New York, sorry. It's, yeah, I just think it's an interesting story that should be told.
Yeah. And so then, I mean, I do think you hit right on it. Like, wherever you're at, you use whatever resources you have to reach out to the people who should be in your show. Because
yeah.
that's a part of it, too. Like, one of the big points of In the Heights is, you know, there aren't Latin American characters in musical theater. Not authentic ones,
yeah.
You know, like if you say West Side Story is, I'll punch you. like, and part of it is creating these roles for people interested in them.
Totally. And, like 100% In the Heights was the first time
yeah.
there was Latin American representation
oh.
on the Broadway stage. 100%.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But to segue a bit, I want to talk about professional theater casting.
Yes.
Hey, what's this tonteria that I'm seeing on the street?
never thought I'd see the day. Since when are Latin people scared of heat? When I was a little girl growing up in the hills of Vega Alta, my favorite time of year was Christmas time. Ask me why.
Why?
There wasn't an ounce of snow, but all the coquito would flow. As we sang the aguinaldo, the carnaval would begin to grow. Business is closed, and we're about to go. Let's have a carnaval del barrio.
Okay, so this episode is, of course, sponsored by Gold Star. Tommy, yes. Tell us all about Gold Star.
Well, so I'm looking up right here. As you know, Gold Star has a bunch of tickets to live events, affordable tickets. Yep. Most of their tickets are marked down from the original ones, and they have a bunch of regional tickets right here in Denver. Jimmy, I could go see Crybaby the Musical. Did you know that was a thing?
Absolutely. You're talking to a big John Waters fan right here.
Or if I wanted to put my sports hat on, they've got some Rockies tickets too, and I could go to a baseball game.
That I could tell you nothing about. yeah, if you go over and check out goldstar.com or check out the absolutely free Gold Star app, and if you are one of the first 200 listeners who use our promo code, Happy Hour, then you'll get $10 off your purchase. And that's on the already marked down tickets.
Yeah, a lot of tickets on Gold Star are about 50% off, and I see that here, and it just looks great. Look at this. I could that's go amazing. See Annie.
I would go see Annie.
Yeah, would you?
We'd like to thank you, Edgar Hoover. So great.
Yep, so if you use the promo code HAPPYHOUR, that's happy hour, all caps, one word, at goldstar.com/happyhour, you can get $10 off your first order. That only goes out to our first 200 listeners, so use it quick. Use it now. Run.
Use it now.
Run to your computer.
Hey. Can we raise our voice tonight? Can we make a little noise tonight?
Hey. Esa bonita bandera. Tiene mi alma entera.
In fact, can we sing so loud and raw? Cause they can hear us across the bridge and east of Corpus.
Arriba esa bandera. Alzala donde quiera.
For Puerto Rico, to Santo Domingo, wherever we go, we rep our people and the Vito.
Esa bonita bandera.
One last night in the hood again.
Wepa!
Carnaval del barrio. Carnaval del barrio.
Mira esa bandera.
Carnaval del barrio.
Carnaval
del barrio. Del barrio. Alza la bandera, la bandera dominicana. Alza la bandera, la bandera puertorriqueña. Alza la bandera.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.
It's a very abrupt segue there, but yeah. Yes.
Deep. I think this story crossed both our radars 2 years ago now, 2016, July. Porchlight Theater in Chicago. And this pains me a little bit because I have some friends who have worked with Porchlight.
Yeah.
And they do great shows, and I've seen their shows. They did a production of In the Heights with a non-Latino Usnavi. And it came off of a string of a couple Chicago miscastings. The Marriott, the In the Round Place where I saw Brigadoon first, did a production of Evita with very few Latin actors. And Porchlight got slammed on the internet for their casting. And so I do want to take a step back from this for a second, because I think this is an interesting discussion to have before making some of the assumptions that we normally do in these discussions, right?
Yeah.
You know, because clearly we've had plenty of discussions where anti-whitewashing, anti-brown face, anti-yellow face, all these things, right?
Yep.
Porchlight issued several extensive statements about their casting process.
Okay.
And two of the things they said that I found interesting, and, you know, grain of salt, you never know how true this is, because they issued these things after the controversy, so this could very well be damage control.
Yep.
But in their casting postings, they did use language saying things like they're specifically looking for and encouraging people who self-identify as Latinx to audition for In the Heights.
Yep.
Like they, you know, are looking for that. They don't talk about specifically reaching out. But
okay.
The other thing they mention, and this I find perhaps more fascinating, I assume this is true elsewhere, but I know it is true in America. In America, if you are employing someone, if you are interviewing them for employment, there's like a litany of questions you're not allowed to ask. Some things like, are you pregnant? You know, they're like preventing discrimination from beforehand, yep. right? If you can never ask the question, then you can't discriminate based on what yep. the answer is. One of the questions or the series of questions you can't ask is what race your potential employee identifies as.
Yep.
You cannot ask that. And the statements from Porchlight kind of dance around that, but they seem to imply that we couldn't ask, we didn't know until after we cast. Which is interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's justified, but my greater question is then what's the solution, right?
Yeah.
Because casting actors is, you know, I think one of the few places where you're still being employed on your looks very squarely.
Absolutely.
And part of that includes, you know, this is awful, but what race you look like. Which
exactly.
is different sometimes from what race you are. And so, you know, but you can't suddenly make it okay to start asking everyone at their audition, like, well, what race are you? Because,
yep.
you know, I hope I don't need to explain much further how that's going to backfire in a hot second.
Exactly.
But it is an interesting angle through which to view this. Like, I think Porchlight, you know, the Chicago community has... the Chicago theater community has certainly swung pretty far towards like, we got to do this right. And I'm, you know, I don't have specific examples, but I would assume Porchlight is on that boat now. But like specifically, what do you do? How do you square that circle?
Yeah.
You don't have an answer. You don't have a solution for me, Jim?
Imagine if I just came out with the, like, ultimate, a statement to all theaters across the world.
Right.
I have no answer. And one of the reasons I don't have an answer is because the West End production encountered exact same issues.
Yeah.
But virtually nothing was made of it.
Yeah. Interesting.
Exactly. So... I mean, the main one, Usnavi,
mm-hmm.
isn't Latin American. I'm pretty sure he's, again, you know,
right.
nowhere has he ever said, hello, this is my race.
Right, it's hard to say. And it's hard, you feel weird assuming, too, right?
Yeah.
Because it feels
But he's
like...
definitely, he said that he isn't Latin American.
Yeah.
Because there's quotes about him talking about hip-hop and how, it's awful. In fact, let me just get the right quote so I don't bastardize it. He was saying, hip-hop for me transcends so many ethnicities now. It's a worldwide phenomena that isn't just for black New Yorkers. And it's like, yes, but you sound like a white guy.
Right, yeah.
Like... Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, even someone like Eminem,
yeah.
who is one of the biggest white hip-hop artists, would never deny the fact that it came from and is shaped by,
yeah,
you know, African
Americans. It's such a, I mean, it's the reason I hate La La Land. It's like the music white savior story that happens time and time again, whether it's hip hop or jazz,
Right.
Like, it's such a pain.
Exactly. Like, so that's pure appropriation. And then, obviously, when Hamilton was announced and the Heights was still running, and everyone was like, oh, well, that's it. You're going to be playing Hamilton. And he... he would kind of have to dance around the role, but never made a statement of being like, no, it's not my role. I'm white. Right.
Yeah. Well,
do you know what I mean?
Why would you say no to playing Hamilton, right?
Like, well, exactly.
Yeah.
But then the thing is, so Hamilton is Latin American because of the show.
Right.
And the story it's trying to tell. Why aren't the same rules applying for Usnavi, who actually is Latin American?
Right, exactly. Whereas Hamilton's a pasty white guy in real life. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, obviously...
Yeah,
it's true. I mean, it's not like they don't have the cast. They've cast Hamilton,
right?
It's like what happened there that allowed it to be okay? What were the conversations that were had? Because Lin-Manuel was very involved.
Yeah,
he was very, very involved. What were the conversations that were had that, like, you know, just made this fine for the West End? Like,
yeah.
It's really odd. It's really odd. And again, you know, not nearly as much of an outcry has been made about it.
Right.
Compared to the Chicago production.
Yeah.
And I think it is just in a sense of, we don't, you know, Latin American by definition is an American race.
Right.
We don't, you know.
Right. So of course
we don't have any representation.
You can't cast
any
locally at all. Yeah.
But then, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
So do you do it?
Right. Do you do? And like, then it becomes a shame. Like, well, then we can't share the story with thousands of people.
Exactly.
If we just say no to it. Yeah. It's tricky. It's tricky with this one. It's tricky with this one because it is such a good story. And like, it's a worthwhile story, and it's a story about a culture. Like, it would be the... I'm leading into something that is still I still get my panties in a bunch over it, but because this story is worthwhile. Do you know what story is not worthwhile? Jerome Robbins' Broadway.
Yep.
Have you been following this?
You don't need to tell me twice, but I know it's your favorite topic of conversation at the moment.
So I'll
pass you the soapbox.
It makes me so angry. The Muni is a 100-year-old theater in St. Louis. It's the municipal theater. It is one of the largest outdoor theaters in the world.
Yep.
And certainly the largest outdoor theater to perform musical theater on a consistent basis.
Yep.
Famous regional theater. I think has won a Tony, like one of the regional theater Tonys. Hugely popular. Performed Jerome Robbins' Broadway recently, a couple weeks ago. It's a hard show to get rights to, because it's really the rights to like 14 different shows.
Yeah.
All owned. And so it hasn't been performed a lot. Yeah. And the Muni...
I don't think it's been performed since...
Since its premiere? That sounds
right.
It includes, you know, your favorite numbers from your favorite musicals that Jerome Robbins has choreographed, including On the Town and West Side Story and The King and I. And the Muni did some, like, really super racist caricatures of some characters in these shows. Not that The King and I or West Side Story are... the best representations of Asian culture or Latin culture to begin with, but then to have like Whitey McWhiteface the actor put on a, you know, racist broken Asian dialect or a poor exaggerated Latin dialect.
Yeah.
Like, it is motherfucking 2018. Like, if you are an artistic director of a theater this large and this prestigious, you should know better. You should know better. And it's not like one, you should have cast appropriately. But even if you haven't cast appropriately, you can at least not put on the racist accent. That's a change you can like raise your hand and make on the last dress rehearsal. And the Muni backpedaled with the worst backpedaling letter I've ever seen. Their main excuse was, well, our next production is The Wiz, so we couldn't possibly be racist, which is literally, like, word for word, the I have a black friend excuse.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't be racist, I have a black friend. We can't be racist, we're doing The Wiz.
We're doing The Wiz.
Like, screw you, the Muni. And they, yep. It's kind of died down because their shows don't last very long, and yeah. People in St. Louis don't care. But it peeved me some huge, Jimmy. It really, yeah, really sure. did.
Do you know one of the things, people will roll their eyes when they hear this, but one of the things that pissed me off about it,
yeah,
it was more of the fact that it wasn't as big an outcry. I guess it's not as big a platform, but basically, when we go back to Comet.
Yeah. Yes.
Comet got shut down because they said it was racist.
Yeah.
Because it
smelled like it might be racist, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, people lost their jobs because it was racist. This thing is actually racist.
They played... There was, like, a protest at the show. Yep. People yelled and walked out. And then they played two more performances.
Yep.
And as far as I know, they played them unchanged.
Well, that's it. Do you know what I mean? It takes one casting choice. And, that happened in... It just kind of baffles me. And like you say... It is 2018 now.
Yeah.
We don't really make these mistakes anymore. Like,
The
conversations have already been had.
Well, I would say we shouldn't make these mistakes anymore. I'm learning more and more that my ideal of a non-racist America is just patently untrue.
Well, there was a recent West Side Story concert that was going to happen starring Sierra Bloody Boggess.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's... stop.
Yeah. Like...
But that didn't go ahead because
there was an outcry.
Hashtag racist.
Like. Right. And it does, I do see it begging the question, like, can we ever perform I wonder if I've talked about this. They released all of the Looney Tunes on a DVD set as like a collector's item. Like, watch all the Looney Tunes. And... It starts with a speech by Whoopi Goldberg, because what Looney Tunes cartoon shouldn't start with a speech by Whoopi Goldberg?
Right.
Where she says, basically, and you should, we'll find it and put it in the show notes.
Yeah, for sure.
But she says basically like, hey, these cartoons you're about to see are from a different era. There are some things in there that are not okay. There are some racist things, there are some offensive things, and... You know, there are things that wouldn't exist if we made these cartoons today. But it also feels like it would do a disservice to censor those things or cut those things out.
Yep.
And so we present them as is. And, like, it does beg the question, can we do West Side Story ever again? You know, can we do The King and I? I don't think we need to do The King and I. Like... There are some really nice pieces of musical theater that have some really racist, offensive moments. And, like, it is interesting to see the theater community grapple with how do we do that, especially because the theater community exists in this weird, bizarre art recreation form. Like, we take old works and make them new again in a way that, like, movies don't. Well, not as much until recently. Or that books don't, you know, you're not going to be like the new rewritten version of whatever.
Right.
It is really fascinating to watch the theater community grapple with it and get it wrong a lot.
Yeah. I think the tricky thing is there, comparing it to other things, is with a book, it's a hard thing.
Right.
So it's
done.
It exists. Yeah, exactly. It existed in its time. Whereas a theater, when you're putting on a revival of a show, you are recreating it.
Yeah.
And you are telling a new story, but there's only so much you can do. So I think it's quite important to think about people. So obviously, we're just getting, in fact, I think it's opening next week. The King and I, the Broadway King and I, is just opening on the West End with Kelly O'Hara and Ken Watanabe. And so this is the Bartlett Sher production.
Yeah.
And so for someone like Bartlett Sher,
yeah,
who it seems to be the only person at the moment kind of taking these shows and being like, let's give it a go.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time gets it right.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know much about his King and I production, but certainly for something like Fiddler, which is very broad in terms of its, you know, portrayal.
Yeah.
But what he did with his production was kind of inject the authenticity back into it. He scrapped Jerome Robbins' choreography. He got Hoffa Schechter in.
Yeah.
And it suddenly became a much more authentic, a much, a much realer show. And I think that's the kind of thing that allows you to do these shows and allows you to keep it. It just takes a lot of work.
Yeah, exactly. Or like the time when whichever revival of West Side Story where Lin-Manuel Miranda himself wrote Spanish lyrics off of Sondheim's originals.
Exactly.
You know, like that is the attention and care it takes. And it doesn't seem like any more attention and care is necessary than the normal amount you'd give any show, right?
Yeah.
You have to find a choreographer. Find the right one, you know?
Exactly.
Like, this stuff isn't hard. And, like, the racist option isn't easier either, I don't think.
I would say, well, I mean, other than the fact that you just kind of do it.
Right.
But I don't know any director worth their salt who just kind of does it.
Right. Like, why are you in this anyway?
Yeah.
At that point.
Because I think for Jerome Robbins Broadway, I'm not defending them, but I think what they kind of talk about it in their apology is that this is a dance show.
Right.
Ignore all of the content.
Yeah.
Just look at the footwork.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that's almost what they were saying.
Yeah.
Because they were saying, oh, we couldn't find people of that race to do this choreography. I'm like, first of all, it's the fan dance. So
right, so it's really not that hard.
You can manage.
Yeah.
But like,
that
was the kind of excuse. But that doesn't fly. You're
it doesn't
still telling
fly.
A story.
Well, and they cast in St. Louis and New York. Like, what do you mean you can't find the people? Try harder.
Exactly. I'm sure all of the actors out there who are completely eligible and suitable will kind of sort of be like, huh?
Yeah, be like, I auditioned.
Hello?
Right? Like,
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so tricky. And I think actually Heights is one that is very interesting.
Yeah.
Because actually Heights in its own show, the content of its show, almost all of its leads are Latin American, apart from Benny.
Yeah.
But then you've got a huge chorus.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, you know, if you are a school or an amateur company putting it on, just try and, you know, at least fill the leads.
Right. Yeah. You do your best. You do your best with what you have. And like,
totally. But then it's still New York.
Right.
So the chorus can be whatever you want.
Can be whatever you want. Yeah. And it's the difference between, like, I think that is one of the things that draws a line in my mind. Casting in a high school, you have a limited pool of kids.
Yeah.
Casting a professional production, you have every professional actor.
Exactly. Like, literally all of them.
Your pool
and there's a couple.
Right. They're out there. Try harder.
It's funny because you never hear about out-of-work actors.
Right. Ever. They're all so busy.
They're so busy.
It's hard to find, you know. It's hard to find.
The scheduling.
Right? Oi.
I know.
Frustrates me.
Yes, indeed.
It will frustrate me forever, I think.
I think it will. Yeah, because it didn't end well.
No, it didn't end well. It won't end
it
well.
Ended.
America's going to shit. Yeah, no. It's going to be awful.
Yep.
Happy podcast, everyone.
Hey. But no, we do want to end on a positive note. Don't we?
Yes, we do, Jimmy. Yes, we do. Claudia, Signora, alabanza, 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 Doña Claudia, Signora, alabanza, alabanza, alabanza. Alabanza, Doña Claudia, Señora, alabanza.
alabanza, doña Claudia, señora, alabanza, 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 alabanza.
Do you know this is one of two musicals I know that takes place on July 4th?
I'm just going to leave it at, do you know this is one of two musicals I know?
Yep. I've been faking the rest.
Yep.
For years.
Okay, wait.
I bet you can get there. It's...
Give me a clue.
It's set around the turn of the last century. It's a triple. One person wrote music, book, and lyrics.
Oh, it's Music Man.
The Music Man is set squarely around July 4th and Flag Day.
I didn't
Day.
Realize that.
Yeah.
We talked about Flag Day because I didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
I forget. Maybe it's Shapoopy Night. I don't remember. But one of the like celebration nights is July 4th, which makes it a summer musical. I find it interesting that musicals are set around July 4th, because it's like, I don't know. July 4th is a weird holiday for me. Being an American, it's not a holiday for you, I imagine.
Not really.
Yeah, but like, what, you know, do you have a Scotland Day?
Absolutely not. We've got St. Andrew's Day.
Okay, what do you do on St. Andrew's Day?
We sometimes eat haggis.
You go to work and it's a normal day.
Yeah, we've got like Burns Night as well.
Yeah,
but that, you know, I think the closest we could possibly say would be Hogmanay.
Okay.
Our New Year's celebration.
Right. Yeah.
But that's
attached.
We all have
to
a new
else.
Year.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, every other, like if we're talking, the United States has what are called federal holidays. There's like 12 of them, and they're days you get off, basically. July 4th is one of them. But the rest
Memorial
of them.
Memorial Day, that's Memorial another one. Day,
I guess that's another one, too. Memorial Day, we don't really celebrate. We just kind of get off. I mean, because it's not really a celebration. It's like,
yeah, that's very true,
you know, in memorial of our departed soldiers.
Yep.
But you know, July 4th, certainly American eagle screech sound effect, you know, red, white, and blue and fireworks. But it is, I think it's one of the most beautiful things that date, that celebration is co-opted by this musical. I like it because it pisses conservatives off.
Right.
Because July 4th is, you know, a celebration of our country, as stupid and awful as it is at sometimes. And like,
yep.
You know, the independence we have and how that we are quote unquote unique in our diversity. But that at least the concept and the founding of America is that anyone's welcome, anyone can come in. You know, we're making a new country based on people who can enter, and like contemporary problems aside.
Oh my goodness!
It's an awful.
You're not saying any lies.
It's an awful day in America, friends. But to put that, like, it's July 4th, and look at all of these Latinos celebrating their heritage here in America. You know, combine that with basically the overarching moral of the story that Usnavi has found his home here on 181st Street, not back in Puerto Rico. Is truly American and not this kind of like patriotic fake bullshit that sometimes we tout on 4th of July at our barbecues with our beers. I think that is one of the things that makes this a beautiful musical. And we've talked before about how, like, musical theater is kind of a very American art form.
Yeah, for sure.
And has its founding here. And it is like a... You see these stories through a lot of musical theater. You know, even things like West Side Story. Even things like The Music Man. There is this sense of, like... the American can-do-ism, the, you know, melting pot of who we all are, that, like,
yeah,
you can succeed whether, you know, you're Daddy Warbucks or the huckster Harold Hill or Usnavi, the, you know, businessman who runs his bodega. You can still have a song and a dance and a happy ending at the end of your show. And it's really American, and it's very 4th of July-y too, I think.
Absolutely. It's a pure celebration.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's so much festivity in that show. That's one of the things, again, that really drew me to it,
mm-hmm.
was because because of all the dancing. Like, there's so many party numbers.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
so many big dance yeah. celebration numbers. It's so much fun.
Yeah. Well, and I think there, I forget if it was on Reddit or Twitter, or someone called me out on this on Brigadoon, when I said, I'm from Ireland. Right?
Yes.
Like, clearly I'm not from Ireland.
But you're not?
I know. Can you tell by the fact that I'm not constantly shoveling Lucky Charms into my face?
Exactly. It's all they do.
But I do... There is this American trait that I think is difficult to explain, that I think is very core to being American, is that we are all people of two heritages. That we are from where we're from, quote unquote, in that Ireland kind of way. But also we live here now in this place that a bunch of other people live, you know. And, of course, centuries of atrocities against Native Americans aside and contemporary racist difficulties that our current administration seems to have with anyone who's not totally pale coming into this country. But the core and the foundation and the soul of it is there. And to see it come out in art, to see it live on in these coded, metaphorical, fun night at the theater kind of ways, like, it really does give me goosebumps and give me chills and, like, makes me excited for, you know, this damned experiment of a country we're trying to figure out.
Yeah, for sure. It's true. It's like, I think when I think about American musicals and I think about shows that show national pride, I always think about In the Heights.
Mm-hmm.
Because it shows you the look back.
Yeah.
And it shows you the look now.
Yeah.
It's just very exciting in that way. There's not really anything like it.
It's a stage direction that only exists in the script. And if you haven't seen the show, you'd never know it happened. Let me see if I can find it. It's near the end. Yeah, here it is. The power is still out. This is at the very end. This is right before the finale. The power is still out. Kevin is up on a ladder taking down the Rosario car service sign. Camilla is beside him. He hands the sign down to Camilla. Underneath is the glimmer of an older sign. O'Hanrahan Car Service. And it's the most... It's such a beautiful moment because it is this glimmer of, like, a different culture used to live here, and we're moving out, and a new culture's gonna move in, and it's bittersweet all around, but that is part of the American story, is this struggle, is this, you know, constant movement and, like, melting pot of cultures.
Exactly.
And it's just the tiniest, little, cleverest of moments that, like, you could go through, you could see the show 7 times and never notice.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of a bittersweet thing with them, because obviously they end up having to sell their business in order to provide for Nina, but in order just to kind of make way. But the nice parts are is that we have this abuela painting on the grating.
Right.
And Usnavi is staying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Everything. The hairdresser is shut. The taxi company is shut.
Yeah.
But Usnavi's still there. And I think that's the thing, is it's that, like, we shall overcome.
Yeah.
We will endure.
And it's still, because it's art, because it's a story, like it, you know, the fact that it is a bittersweet ending is like, it doesn't have to be fully happy. It doesn't have, you know, like the, what am I trying to say? A lot of musicals try to be cautionary tales. A lot of musicals try to be like, oh, and then everyone lived happily ever after. And you can feel this. You can leave feeling great about this show.
Yeah.
And like, In the Heights doesn't try to do that. In the Heights is like, hey, you know, shit's real, yo. And sometimes it's good and sometimes it's bad. That's it. There doesn't have to be a but we move on sometimes.
Yes.
You know, there is glimmers of hope, certainly, but it's not... That's not a necessary part of the story. The story is like a real story of, you know, struggle and attempts at overcoming and how that pans out.
And it's got a very nice kind of to be continued vibe.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because not everything is tied up in a nice, neat little bow. It's very like, it's just beginning.
Yeah.
And that's exciting. So I always find it really fun to leave the theater feeling like that. Like, and you get thinking. Yeah. I love that. And that's something I really, really love about Heights.
I do think Heights, more than a lot of shows, I think it's a Brechtian ideal, but like you zoom into the city and then you zoom in through the window and you see the man in his living room going about his daily life. And then at the end of the show, you zoom out of the window and you zoom up to the city and you still have this thought that like you just witnessed a moment in all these people's lives, not their full stories.
It's definitely not Brechtian. I think it might be Stan.
Maybe that's Stan.
Or maybe Chekhov.
I did.
Because it's naturalism. But yeah.
I did get a D in theater history, so, you know.
That's fair. But yeah, it's... Oh, sorry.
That's all right. It's a little slice of life.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's like...
And that is... Yeah, it's just real people. That's the thing is as well.
It's just
like,
real people.
There's no superheroes. There's no,
you
know, anyone. The biggest thing that happens is someone wins $96,000.
Right.
Which and it's in many like, respects doesn't really mean much.
Not that much. And they split it three ways anyway. I guess two by the end of the show. But like, there's like a threshold that a story needs to achieve that's like, why tell this story? Why is this moment on this day more important than all the other moments on all the other days in these characters' lives? And I think In the Heights like just barely gets over that hurdle. And it's one of the most beautiful things about it. It's not, you know... The day Harold Hill came to town and like
and
swindled
everyone.
Or like, you know, the day Max Bialystock finally had a flop that turned into a hit. Like, this is just, you know, they go dancing. They have dinner. They're at the salon. Nina comes back from college. Like, they're just these tiny little everyday things that makes this a slightly more important set of 3 days than July 1st or July 6th around that, you know?
Totally. So I'm excited for the movie.
Now that they got it out of... clutches of the Weinstein death grip. I'm excited for the movie too.
Yeah, I think it's going to be great.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to do a lot of the... Right a lot of the wrongs that West Side Story movie... has created.
Yes. And it's gonna be it's gonna be really good. I'm surprised
it's taken so long.
Yeah, we haven't heard more of it.
I know. I don't know why it's taken so long, because it's literally been being talked about since.
And I don't know if you've noticed, but Lin-Manuel Miranda is so hot right now.
He is.
He's already
maybe just like he just decided to ride the Hamilton wave.
Yeah.
And as that subsides,
it's not like he's not Moana. He's in the new Mary Poppins movies. Like, it's not like he's not working on stuff.
By the way, this one I'm not happy about.
Mary Poppins?
I don't know how true it is. I'm pretty sure it's been confirmed. No.
Oh.
Lin-Manuel is playing Lee Scoresby in the His Dark Materials trilogy BBC adaptation.
Interesting.
Have you read those books?
No, I don't know enough to
Lee
be
Scoresby
angry with
Texan
you about this.
Aeronaut.
I don't.
It makes about as much sense as him playing Bert.
I just hope he puts on a fake Cockney accent in both.
He does. it's really, you know, it's upsetting, but hey, oh. I just, because also I'm not his biggest fan. I don't want to end this on a negative note, but I want to say this.
We'll find something happy to say afterwards.
I'll squeeze the movie conversation right to the end, to the beginning of this bit. Because I'm not his biggest fan.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think he's the best actor. I think he's an incredible writer. I think that is where his gift, and he is gifted.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He is prodigious.
Yes.
But I don't think his acting and his singing is much up to scratch in case
No, I think that's true. I mean, watch the 2008 or 2009 Tonys when they do In the Heights. Not that sound problems are terribly uncommon in these things, but they perform 96,000, and at the ending, like, multi-chorus bit, they leave Lynn's mic on a little too hot, and Lynn's a little very off-key. And it's sad.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, because I've seen Heights now, and I've seen it with an incredible actor playing Hamilton. You know what I mean?
You want to try that one again?
I've seen Heights.
You've seen Heights, and
I've seen Hamilton now. And of course, it was an incredible actor playing Alexander Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, ah, yes.
Yeah.
I guess it now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so he keeps casting himself, and I'm like, stop it.
I think did we talk about this when we talked about Hamilton?
I
rarely have memories that go back more than like two podcasts, but I seem to remember
3 years.
Us having a discussion about, like, is he writing the part for himself, and is that part of the game?
Yep. And so the thing is, right, what I would 100% say is, Usnavi, you take it, man.
Yeah.
You go for it. Because he, you know what I mean?
Right.
That is, he's writing literally what he knows.
It's his block. It's his world. Yeah.
100%. Obviously, with Hamilton, he isn't Alexander. And he, you know, he's made a lot of comparisons with himself.
Right.
And Alexander Hamilton and all that. And I'm like, absolutely, but... Yeah. I don't know. I find it tricky.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I know when we had the chat, when we were chatting Dave Malloy.
Oh, yes. That is when we talked about it. That makes more sense. Yeah.
Yep. So, I don't know.
Yeah, hard
but
to
I
say.
Don't want to say too much because there'll be dartboards on my head.
You'll be shot out of the sky.
I think that's the rule.
Basically, yeah. Don't.
That's the rule. But no, I'm not saying he's not talented. The man is a genius.
Obviously a genius. Unquestionably.
Like... Exactly. He is a defined genius.
Yes. And a decent actor.
Decent enough. One of my favorite moments was him in Modern Family. That was great.
You know what I liked him in? He was, there are clips of the, I think it's an Encores, when they did Merrily We Roll Along.
Oh, Merrily. Yes. He was a really good Charlie.
My favorite Charlie song, Franklin Shepherd Inc. Is my favorite. It's To Die For. Because he's got that patter down. Because he's been rapping his whole life.
I know. But he tries to sing the other songs. And he it's fine.
Oh, man. And Jimmy has taken his headphones off again. And he's up on his desk again.
I'm not shouting this time. I don't know. I just feel... But then, you know, so many times that happens, it doesn't go to the best. It's not like he's got like an Elaine Stritch vibe where it's like, you've got this powerhouse behind you.
Right.
But then I guess when it comes to the rapping,
I think he kills the rapping. I think like I have listened to recordings.
Okay, I'm sitting back a little bit there.
I have listened to recordings of other people doing Heights and doing Hamilton. And I think he gets it because he wrote it. I mean, obviously he's got quite the leg up there, but there is... You know, it's the problem we're going to have when all of these white suburban schools start doing Hamilton.
Yeah.
Or the problem, this weird uncanny valley that I felt when I watched the West End performance of Hamilton on the Olivier's.
Uh-huh.
Where, like, they're just finishing their words a little too much.
Yeah.
And, like, just putting too many consonants on things here and there. And they miss the cadence and they miss the rhythm. And it's not a thing, like, I can't demonstrate it. It is like a talent, not a skill.
Well, it's like what I hear when people try and do Scottish accent.
Yeah, like the little inconsistencies there. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I retract that. He's an extreme, no one can rival him on the rap. Just don't write yourself singing bits then.
There you go. Yeah. I want to hear him do the witches rap.
He will 100% that will exist. Out
I want to. I want to hear him do the witches rap, and I want to hear him do "You Got Trouble." I've seen Patti LuPone do them. I now want to see Lin-Manuel Miranda do them. I want to see Patti LuPone and Lin-Manuel Miranda switch spots in their iconic roles.
What?
I just want that in my life.
You want Lin-Manuel Miranda to do Rose's Turn?
Yes, and I want Patti LuPone to write half of Bring It On.
That was funny. That was good. That was a good joke.
Thank you. I try. I strive for humor.
They don't happen all the time.
Nope. Very rarely, in fact.
Yeah, I'm a street light chilling in the heat. I illuminate the stories of the people in the street. Some have happy endings, some are bittersweet. But I know them all, and that's what makes my life complete. And if not me, who keeps our legacies? Who's going to keep the coffees, leave the secret recipes? Abuela, rest in peace. You live in my memories, but somebody's got to eat. Corner is my destiny, brings out the best to me. We pass the test and we keep pressing, and yes, indeed, you know I'll never leave. If you close your eyes, that hydrant is a beach, the siren is a breeze, that fire is scared to leave on a fall tree. Abuela, I'm sorry, but I ain't going back because I'm telling your story. And I can say goodbye to you smiling. I found my island, I've been holding this whole time. I'm home. It's a wonderful life that straight. I'm stepping to Vanessa, I'm getting the second date. I'm home, where it's 100 in the shade, but with patience and faith we remain unafraid. I'm home, you hear that music in the air, take the train to the top of the world, and I'm there. I'm home.
That, Jimmy, was In the Heights.
It was. Yay. We did it. I'll never mention my directing of it again.
That's not true at all. You're such a liar.
I know. Hooray.
It is one of the only shows I've read that has light cues indicated by in lines spoken by characters. Did you notice that it starts and ends with light cues? Lights up on Washington Heights, and then Act One ends with blackout. And then the finale begins with lights out on Washington Heights. Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Oh.
And it adds to...
And then Sunrise is the opening of Act One.
Yep. It adds to the kind of like theatricality, you know, and having a narrator does that. But like we're telling you a story and it's on stage and we're acknowledging that. Blackout.
Lin-Manuel Miranda.
It's very Lin-Manuel Miranda.
I have to give massive shout-outs to my lighting designer, by the way. He did an incredible job. It was... stunning.
Yeah, because all the cues are written in the script.
His artistry, actually, Tommy, it's more than just cues. I don't know if you know this about light.
No, I don't know anything about lighting design.
Absolutely nothing at all.
At all.
So that was In the Heights. What are we doing next time, Tommy? Give me an equipment.
I got equipment for you. To our knowledge, this show, the one we're talking about next week, is one of the only Broadway musicals to include a full stage splash guard for audience protection. Did you like that? I used my infomercial voice. Full that stage splash guard. Do you have infomercials?
I want one.
In Scotland?
Mom! Do we have commercials?
Infomercials. Where like someone is bumbling in black and white with like a pot that can't
like
boil
the corn baller
or something. Like the corn baller, but real. Yes.
Yeah. No.
Well,
so there.
You're lucky.
Yep. And do you know, this is, I bet you this will baffle you.
Huh.
On BBC.
Yeah. There are no commercials.
There are no commercials.
Yeah, because you guys pay a television tax.
Exactly.
This is a thing about British culture, I do know.
Okay.
We're getting close to paying a television tax with the way Netflix is going. It's just, you know.
True. Yeah, that's 100% true.
Our free market world. although Hulu's messing that up because you can pay to still have commercials. Anyway.
Yay. Anyway, yeah, that weird rant. If you'd like to get in touch with us and talk about television, you can. Come find me over on Twitter at AsInHendrix.
And I'm Musical Mash on Twitter and Musical Theater Mash on YouTube, or you can check out our show Twitter at Jim and Tomic.
Or you can go to our website, jimandtomic.com, which has a link to our Reddit discussion where you can chat up a storm. I've got some things to say about Heights.
What? No way.
I know. You would never have guessed.
Never.
Still so much more to be said.
Never, ever had guessed. Hey, if you like this show, will you go leave us a review on iTunes? It really helps us out. Or sorry, it's called Apple Podcasts now. Wherever it is. Exactly. Just, you know, whatever. It really helps other people find the show and does a lot of good things for the algorithm. It's all about the algorithm nowadays, Jimmy.
It's all about the algorithm. We know all about that. Yes. So that would be lovely. And we shall see you next week.
Bye. I panicked. Good night, kittens. Know what to say. I panicked, so I just said bye. I felt like I needed to think of something creative, but then I just said bye, Jimmy.
Like, toodly gosh, doodoo. I think what we'll do at one point is make a compilation video. Well, not video. Thing. Of all of your goodbyes.
Just my stupid goodbyes.
And then we'll find out it's actually, if you play it backwards.
Right, it's a recipe for cake.
That would be so fun. yes. Anyway, bye.
Bye.
But yeah.
I did get a D in theater history, so, you know.
That's fair. I got a D in theater history. Yeah. Hey, you know what I'm saying?
We are in... I'm not going to fit that in. Of integrity.
I'm not going to fit that in because we're in some moment. But I might just fit it at the end.
Perfect.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.